Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. It's time to focus on the Pope whose pontificate coincided with the German occupation of Rome. So stay tuned as I bring you some exclusive sound from our very own archives, including the witness of some of those who lived through those dramatic days. So do get ready to listen to the voice of the Pope of that era, Pius XII. That is the actual sound of the air raid on Rome on July the 19th, 1943.
L'umanità lo deve alle molte migliaia di non combattenti, donne, bambini, infermi e vecchi, a cui la guerra aerea, il cui orrore...
And Pope Pius XII continued to decry the atrocities of a war that had been raging for over 4 years.
Ha tolto vita, beni, salute, case, luoghi di carità e di preghiera.
When Rome was bombed, the Pope, while the bombing was still going on, ordered his car and went right away to the place, exposing himself to real danger because the bombing was still going on. He tried to speak to the people to console them. He knelt down, his cassock was covered with blood.
Jesuit Father Peter Gumpel recalled how the Pope went out to be among his fellow Romans on that dramatic day.
And the thing was particularly tragic in this sense that he had done everything possible to persuade the Allies not to bomb Rome, but the Allies did not recognize Rome to be an open city.
The day that the Allies bombed, because we kept on saying they'll never bomb Rome, they'll never touch Rome, the Pope had asked for an open city. But in fact, that day came when they did bomb, and that's down San Lorenzo. They continued to bomb that station, but they hit the Basilica.
Ursuline sister and Kathleen England was in Rome during that ugly, unexpected chapter in the city's history.
Transport, whatever, to do something with another sister, and we saw all the crowds coming out, Regina, Margherita, carrying what they could, walking up from their whole place had been bombed. So we went to San Lorenzo. And San Lorenzo was just one heap of ruins, except for the sanctuary. And we sat on the stone bench of the top part of the sanctuary, which is still, you can see it. And we ate a crust of bread and looked down on these ruins. When I have been there sometimes now and heard tourists talking, I've said, you never knew what it was.
Above all, the Pope was tried to avoid Rome being involved in the war action. And then, of course, under the German occupation, which lasted 9 months, an incredible period in history, which things happened that are... you can't imagine how it was that they were so possible. That was just so anomalous the situation was in Rome. And, of course, the police...
Jesuit Father Robert Graham, foremost historian on the Vatican and World War II, lived through the German occupation of the city.
The resistant people were being arrested, and famous Kappler was an SS police chief in Rome. And then, of course, on the 16th of October, the Jews were... There was a special task force of German anti-Semites came down here, and in one night they scooped up with 1,000 Jews, as we know, and the Pope made his protest, but he didn't... as an American, I would like to have gone down to the ghetto, you know, and like Attila, you know, against Attila, the famous Pope in the early days, but he did protest. And most important, among others, was his work of Padre Pancrazio Pfeiffer, who was the right-hand man of the Pope for this sort of thing. He was a German. He had contacts with the Germans. And the historical record shows that Pancrazio was intervening himself. in the name of the Pope with the Germans to lay off, take it out, save Rome. So it was a dramatic situation from September 1943 until June 1944. Nobody knew what the next day would bring.
Someone shot a German and they took hostages. They took every other house, took somebody, totally innocent. And there were about 300 of them. And they took them to the Argentina and they killed the whole lot of them. And this was a terrible moment. We got a sort of bush telephone which told us, people were telling each other what was happening. But that was a revenge, I suppose a wartime revenge, on something that had been done to the enemy.
When the roundup of the Jews in Rome started, that morning I was strangely off in my office in Palazzo San Callisto and heard this, that the army trucks, the German trucks, ran out, and there at the back, near Villa Cisterna, they were going into a building and these people were being brought out, and then later I found out that they were Jews. And we thought immediately they were being taken to a labour camp.
Monsignor Carol Abbing was encouraged by Pius XII to organise humanitarian relief on the battlefront south of Rome.
Perhaps to mass for the first time in months. And many of them were rounded up afterwards and taken off to labour camps, or digging ditches or other things, or fortifications, you see. So it was all very... we must have known by... And, of course, the great thing was, as many protests came during that time, that the Holy Father was speaking out too much. So easy for him, he's in the Vatican there, he's not being touched. But we have to face, you see. And sometimes when some of the bishops had been very, very explicit of the northern countries, there was an immediate reaction and accentuation of roundups of people who are hostile to the Jews and others, you see. As an immediate result, and so they're saying, why doesn't he keep his mouth shut? So it was very difficult for the person in the street.
And Pius XII couldn't do more than what he did, and that I'm absolutely sure, because every convent in Rome had an enormous piece of paper outside the convent to say that it belonged to the Vatican, and therefore the Germans weren't allowed to go in.
Josette Brucoleri was a student in Rome during the German occupation.
A lot of were Jews, and also a lot of Italians who had been real anti-fascists were being sought for by the Germans to be sent to be tortured or sent to the German concentration camps.
The reports about concentration camps and what happened in these concentration camps had to be taken with an enormous amount of prudence, because there was always the danger that this was propaganda issued by the Allies. This had happened in the First World War, in which especially the press headed by the later Lord Beaverbrook accused German soldiers of having cut off the hands of children, when after the war in Belgium investigations were made, it turned out to be absolutely untrue. And in the British Parliament itself, it was later recognized that this had been a propaganda stunt, and the same thing happened in the Second World War. Many rumors were spread deliberately, and it was very difficult to ascertain, and it would have been dangerous for the Pope to come out with concrete statements unless they could be proved by ironclad documents. Unless you have lived under a very tight dictatorship, a highly organized political dictatorship, unless you have done that, it is very difficult to imagine the situation in which people were living.
I mean, we wouldn't even speak in the family about things we knew about we knew by chance where somebody was hidden. There were the people who were on the side of the SS and who would do anything to say where somebody was hiding. And then there were the other crowd, whom, like me, and who knew things, but I never spoke to anybody.
You were in Palazzo Doria when the Germans came to take away the Prince Dorian, eh?
Yes, well, that was a terrible evening, frightful evening. The Germans surrounded the palace and broke the doors, but Prince Doria hid in the archives.
Why did they want to arrest Prince Dorian?
He was a well-known anti-fascist. He'd always been anti-fascist. A lot of people were anti-fascists, but they pretended they weren't because it was also a question of survival.
The Germans came to look for us, so we went into hiding.
How long were you in hiding for?
The 9 months of German occupation, September 43 to June 44.
Princess Doria Pamphili remembered that dramatic evening and the subsequent drama of going into hiding together with her mother. She also recalled how Monsignor O'Flaherty, a family friend who ran a rescue operation inside Vatican City for refugees, scolded her for taking too many risks.
And very fond of. In fact, when we were in hiding, he came to see us one day, knowing there was a South African prisoner hiding with the same family, and said, I know what you... There were two, a mother and daughter we were hiding with. And my mother and I were there, and he said, I know what you girls are up to. We're going to move him. It's too dangerous. And he did get moved, in fact. Because if you were caught with an Allied prisoner, you were shot, of course.
My mother used to take the letters out of the boxes of the Red Cross. She worked there. Then she brought them home, and then I, in my school uniform, at 18, with plaits and a blackberry on my head, coat that was miles too small for me. I had nothing else to wear anyway. I used to go into the Vatican and take them to Monsignor O'Flaherty.
You had the famous rescue operation of Monsignor O'Flaherty in union with the British. You must realize the British had quite a developed program of escapes and evasions, namely. The whole system, not merely in Rome, but all through the occupied areas, the British had a network of relief for their own prisoners of war. The highways of Italy were filled with escaped British prisoners of war. Where do they go? The Germans picked them up and shipped them to Germany. In many cases, others managed to escape the German police, and a lot of them came into Rome. They thought that was safe there, and in a certain sense, it was.
The Pope sheltered a lot of people in the Vatican and in Castel Gandolfo. And, he organized a whole... Everything was organized in collaboration with the International Red Cross, I think. And there's no doubt that he was in a position... It was touch and go. He was a very great pope. He did an enormous amount in a very difficult situation.
Nobody knew what the next day would bring, but the pope was there always, and his hand hung over the city like a good angel.
Hope you enjoyed this exclusive sound from our very own Vatican Radio archives, focusing on the figure of Pope Pius XII, who, for the record, was elected as successor of Peter on the 2nd of March 1939 and died on the 9th of October 1958. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.